episode of Lie, Cheat, and Steal, the podcast about liars, frauds, thieves, and bullshitters. I'm your host, Pat Savoys. Just to remind you guys, we're a bi-monthly podcast, and you can listen to us wherever podcasts are listened to. You can also find us on social media. We are at TikTok, Instagram, and on YouTube, all at Lie, Cheat, Steal Podcast. We do full video episodes for all of our free episodes, so go check those out on the YouTube and find the clips on TikTok and Instagram. We also have a Patreon, so if you like what you hear, you can listen to two more episodes a month. Go to patreon.com/liecheatandsteal. And if you haven't already, please give the podcast an episode a like and go ahead and leave us a rating and a review. That helps us get the word out. That being said, I'm here with my co-host, as always, Kath Barbadoro. How you doing?
Hi, Pat. I also wanted to say something really exciting about our Patreon. We now have ad-free versions of our free episodes on there. So if you hate having ads, check us out. You get double the episodes and no ads. It's a great deal.
Got to check it out. Also, access to our Discord server, which is a fun place. Yeah, a lot of scam talk going on there. Stuff we can't necessarily devote to a whole episode. Those guys are in there chopping it up, breaking it down. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. But yeah, other than that, I'm pretty good. It's kind of late and I haven't eaten dinner yet, so I'm sorry if I feel or like sound weird, like for example using the word feel in a way that doesn't make sense. I'm a little out of it. I'm at this artist retreat and like it's great. The people who work here and run it are like so cool and nice, but so they usually have like a chef that comes and makes everybody dinner, but she is like off this week. And so they're having this like restaurant in town bring us food ahead of time and then we just heat it up. The problem with that is that there are five of us here and they are bringing us food for like 20 people every day. Every single day we get three steam table buffet things of food and we're like five women and we just like can't eat all this food. I don't know why it stresses me out so much, but it stresses me out so much. Like, there's no more room in the fridge. And it's only Thursday, and we're here until Sunday. And I'm just, like, so stressed about it. So anyway, that's what's on my mind.
Where is this artist thing located again? Because, like, I mean, if you guys need some of this food taken care of, I can pull up.
I'm trying to, like,
my car.
I'm seriously, like, I posted on Blue Sky today. I'm like, if any of you live near Ghent, New York, like, hit me up, and you want, like, a like tray of eggplant parmesan. Like it's good food. Ooh, the food is good. I don't know. I hate wasting food and it's like really stressing me out. I don't know why this is like bothering me so much, but yeah.
I can see that. I was on the road one time and we stayed in an Airbnb, me and like three other comics, and I went and bought a bunch of food and then like as my old manager was, schedule change, we're actually leaving. And I had all this fucking food in the fridge. I was pretty hot. I was like, I tried to cook as much of it as I could to like bring it in my cooler. But even then, it was like a fool's errand.
I'm like, we told all of the people, because there are people that work here during the day, and we're like, take this home to your families. Like, we don't want it to go to waste. And then also we were like, can we like skip a night? Can they just like not come one night and then we can just eat leftovers? And they were like, we already paid for the week. And I'm like, right. Like, I guess. So anyway, it's a good problem. I just like, I hate throwing stuff away. It bums me out. You know, I guess that there are starving children in Africa thing really worked on me as a kid.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Man, so how remote are you where you're at? Because I one thing I love about that part of the country is just some of like just the, you know, the wilderness places and stuff like that. Are you like out in like the kind of the middle of nowhere, like a little like small town in northern New York?
Yeah, I mean, we're not in northern New York. We're near Hudson, which is it took us about 2 hours on the train to get here. On the Amtrak. And then it's like a 20-minute drive from Hudson, New York. So it's like, it's rural enough that you can't really walk anywhere. So there's this, we're adjacent to this really big like sculpture garden. That's like, I say garden, it's like acres and acres and acres. Like I went on like a 2.5 mile walk yesterday all through with all these like sculptures and stuff. So it's cool. There's a lot of space. There've been deer outside my window every morning when I've woken up.
That's
like
dope.
It's cool. Yeah. So it's definitely like nature, but it's not like, you know, totally out there. I think I might, the weather's supposed to be nice tomorrow, I think I'm gonna take a bike ride, and it's like a 20-minute bike ride into town, so We're not That's too rad. Far from civilization, but it's yeah, it's cool. It's really nice.
Yeah, man. I've been doing a lot of hiking myself lately. Pretty much since I stopped drinking every weekend.
Hell yeah.
Saturday
I
and Sunday.
I love to hike. Good for you.
I love it, man. I'm like, that's my thing now. I go to one of the walking trails in Austin. I just pick a new one every time. I started circling back to some now because I've had a couple ones where I've gone and be like, oh, this isn't as tight as I wanted it to be. So yeah. I'm going back to some of the bangers. But it's cool. Like, my job has trained me to wake up at ungodly hours in the morning. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I get up there and, like, I'm not drinking, so I wake up early.
Yeah.
I go out, and it's pretty cool, man. I beat all the dog moms. Like, I'm already walking out. 4 miles. I already did like 4 miles and I'm walking out and like everybody else is then showing up. And
right.
That's really cool.
That's great. That's also that's a really good habit to keep up in the summer because then you can still hike before it gets too hot.
Yeah. One other cool thing is I've been getting outside. I've been getting a little sun on the old face.
I noticed you looked a little tan.
Yeah. I went, man, even I work construction, but I don't work in direct sunlight.
Right.
And then, on the way to the car, then you have your hard hat, which kind of covers your face. So, mm-hmm. It's not like I get the benefits of, working outside.
Yeah.
And so I've been out there and catch some sun, but it's cool, man. Also, I'll just go out there. I'll, park my car, just fat rip off a bowl and just walk through the woods, and it's so tight.
It's good times.
And if you guys follow me on Instagram, it's at PZTX. I have a little thing. I always post a little video from nature. It's like a still video or not still, but like a stationary video. And then I just always have the word mid pop up on it, even though it's beautiful. And yeah, that's my thing. It's just
that
dissing
rocks.
Nature.
That's
so
one
yeah,
thing
it's been cool as hell, man.
That's one thing I don't like about New York City is it's really hard to get out to nature if you don't have a car. Like,
yeah,
you can come up to these cute little towns in the Hudson Valley, but as far as hiking, you gotta have a car. Miss it. I love it.
Day. Yeah,
it's so fun.
It's been cool. I've been hitting out in far west Austin. You're just
up
west
in the
Lake,
hills.
Essentially. Yeah, yeah, up in the hills, nice trails. I learned some. You learned some stuff out there. If you have enough money, the city will build a sign that warning people for your specific driveway.
Yeah,
they're just hey, some really rich guy's driveway is tricky over there, so I need you to be careful because he decided to build a blind driveway.
Right.
yeah, it's pretty tight. That's a level of wealth, but.
Well, speaking of wealth, we're going to be talking about a high roller today.
Ooh.
This is a gambling story, actually. This is another.
Nice.
This is about a gambler. Perhaps a little bit of a late sequel to our series with Zach Brooks.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever seen the movie Owning Mahoney?
No.
Okay. I had never seen it either. I just saw it playing on cable a lot because I remember that name. Owning Mahoney. It's kind of a weird name.
I feel like I've heard that, but I'm also thinking of our friend Mahoney Slushy.
So it came up recently is because I don't know if it was the anniversary of his death or his birthday or whatever, but people were posting a lot of clips of Philip Seymour Hoffman, who is the star of Owning Mahoney. So,
I was talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman just the other day with my roommate. It is when he's the villain in Mission Impossible,
mm-hmm.
and he has it's like a scary scene where they kidnap him. He's on the plane. He wakes up. He comes to, and he's immediately, "Do you have a wife or a girlfriend? Because she's dead."
Yeah,
it's just it was chilling. I was like, oh man, that guy rules. R.I.P. Man.
He was fucking awesome. He's so I love him in The Talented Mr. Ripley. He's so good as the playboy friend.
I haven't seen Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, it's great, especially for a fan of scams. It's awesome. It's really good. I might watch it after this. It's fun. So it takes place in the 50s and he plays one of those guys where it's in the 50s, straight guys could be gay. You could be if you were a rich guy in the 50s, you could be kind of effeminate and it was not considered. He's playing that and it's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's fun as hell. I woke up and watched a random movie, one day we're just I'm just gonna watch something that I've never seen before, and I watched Doubt with Meryl Streep and Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, he's great in that.
That was really good. Yeah, I just woke up, got stoned, and was like, I'm just diving into this movie. I don't really know anything about it, and it was just two really good performances. But then I don't want to spoil it, but the last, she goes, that last word of her movie, she goes, I have doubt.
Yeah, it's very funny that it ends that way.
Doubt. Yeah.
But yeah, so Owning Mahoney is based on a true story of a guy named Brian Maloney. So that's who we're talking about today.
The little Nardawar name switch there, you know?
Yeah. Interesting you'd bring up Nardawar because this guy is Canadian. So perfect synergy happening here.
You know what? I messed up on that. I was thinking the other guy, our scam guy from India. What was his name? Not Warlaw.
Oh. I thought you were talking about Nardawar, the music interviewer.
Yeah, the interviewer guy that knows like crazy facts. Yeah, no, I was talking about Nat Warlaw, where he got the wrong name, and then yeah. Sorry, yeah, my bad about that. So it's these non-alcoholic beers, man.
Yeah,
they're getting to me.
Messing you up. So Brian Maloney, he's a Canadian. He was born in 1955. By the way, a lot of this stuff comes from the Toronto Star. There's an article from 2017 by Carol Levanak called "The Banker with the Terrible Secret." Nice. So that's where a lot of this comes from.
Isn't it like every banker?
Yeah, for real. They're all hiding bodies. Another thing that was weird about researching this story is there were tons and tons of AI written articles about it, which like was, I haven't encountered that with other subjects, and I feel like it's something we're going to have to deal with more and more, and it creeped me out.
Yeah, I had that in my last research about the woman from San Antonio that stole the money, the military lady.
Yeah.
I was driving, and I was like, okay, let's do a video. I'm trying to go find a video, like get an overview of the case. Mm-hmm. It was one of those ones where it just kept saying the same sentence different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, several times it was like, she used her status within the military to get these funds that were meant for kids. The funds that she retrieved were meant for children. And it just like kept saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, G, we're here.
Yeah.
Singularity.
It was like weird because I'd be reading something and I'd be like, this is weird. They're like repeating all of the proper nouns too often. Like there was just, it was written really inelegantly. And then I was like, who wrote this? And I scroll up and it's like, oh, no one. This was written by no one.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
that's why it sounds like that. But yeah, so I got this mostly from Toronto Star and from Wikipedia and some sources cited there that were written by real human beings. But yeah, so this guy, Brian Maloney, who was born in the 50s, he had a couple siblings. His dad was a doctor and his mom was a housewife. His dad, in addition to being a doctor, really liked to gamble. He was big at horse races. He liked to bet on the horses. So when Brian started going to the track with him like really young, and he placed his first bet on a horse when he was 12. So got him started early. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Any word of the horse won?
It won. His first bet was a winner.
Yeah.
So he's in for life.
He's done. Yeah. Throw the towel. That dude is addicted to gambling, man. Yeah.
He was in right away. And yeah, he had support from his dad. Apparently his dad, it doesn't sound like his dad was a real problem gambler, but like he definitely enjoyed it. And by the time Maloney was a teenager, he was acting as a bookie for his friends with like sporting events and stuff. So I can imagine he was hooking these people too, because he was like super well versed in gambling. He was probably like setting odds and like doing money line bets and prop bets and stuff. Like he probably knew all that because he was an inveterate gambler by like 17, you know?
Just marinated in it.
So his friends say that like who gambled with him as a kid, because something that's interesting about this is the stuff we're going to talk about later, nobody in his life knew about it. He kept it secret. But like at this time in his life, he was gambling with his friends and stuff, like, you know, small time stuff. And his friend said like the money was nice, but he just loved the thrill. Like it was the act of gambling, the ritual of gambling, which like so much addiction ends up being like that, where it's like,
yeah, we've talked a lot about gambling on the show recently. And like, that's how I know I'm not a gambling addict, because I hate that part of it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I don't really like, that's I really like the payoff, you know what I'm saying? Like if it goes well.
It's like, it's fun. I don't know if I said this on the show, but like I realized that gambling is not a problem for me because I get too mad when I lose. Like, it's not the thrill of winning does not outweigh the irritation of losing. So like I like watching a sports game that I have money on. It's really exciting. It makes watching the sports game more fun, but losing is too annoying. And so I won't do it.
There's a, you know, we did the squares at the lodge. They're already, we decided we're doing $100 squares.
Damn.
For the next Super Bowl, and they're already out. So it's like you have a year to buy in. So I'm just saying, if you want me to throw some money on the board for you, I will throw you up. I'm toying with the idea of buying one a month until the next Super Bowl.
Dude, don't do that. Don't do
that. Yeah, but that's just $100 a month.
you think about what you could buy with $100 a month. But Pat, that's like a phone bill. That's like a lot of money.
No, it is. It is a phone bill a month. we'll see. I'm definitely going to put something on there.
Yeah, I might get you to buy me one. I'll figure it out. But
because it's gonna be $2,000 for every quarter and $4,000 for the fourth quarter.
That's insane.
So
this guy would have been right at home at the lodge because he was just loving it. He was super into it, and he just sort of got more and more compulsive as he got older. So. He goes to college. He is really he's a very bright guy. He's like kind of nerdy, but he's really smart and he's really motivated. And he goes to school for journalism, and then he gets a job as a financial writer. He ends up working at a bank, and the bank, it's the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce. They make everybody who gets a job there take a entrance exam and like a personality test and basically an IQ test type thing.
Yeah.
And he does really, really well on it. And so they immediately, even though he's like only has a bachelor's and stuff, he is immediately placed in their managerial training program. They're like, you're great. We love you.
Yeah.
Let's get you like fast tracked, you know? So while he's in this management program, he starts as a teller, but he gets moved up after just like a couple weeks because they're like,
nice.
You're great at banking. I don't know how you're like, I don't know what you do to like be a better teller than the other tellers, but apparently he's doing it. So he gets, as he's climbing this ladder, he gets access to more and more and bigger accounts, and like he's in charge of loans, he's in charge of foreign exchange, he becomes the assistant manager, so he's like overseeing everything at this bank. He's 26 years old at this time, so like he really shot up that ladder quickly.
I feel like when you're 26 but you're born in 1955, you're like 40,
right?
you have like the perks and the responsibilities of a 40 year old today.
Yeah, completely.
That's ageflation right there.
So this is like being the Doogie Howser of the bank to me, but you're right that like back in the day this was like a old man with a mortgage and kids and stuff.
Yeah, I loved Doogie Howser. It's one of those shows. I haven't gone back and rewatched it, but just the idea of it, I was like, what? That is bizarre that was even that was even taken seriously as a premise for a TV show.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I used to watch that, too. It is like, even if he's that good at being a doctor, he's not going to be that good of a doctor because no one is going to listen to him. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Be realistic.
Yeah. Yeah. I there's no way every episode should have been about people like, this is your surgeon, Doogie Howser. I'm like, no.
Fuck off. Yeah.
Yeah, fuck no.
I'm getting a second opinion. Yeah. Bring me a grown up. So he gets to the point where he is overseeing this bank. It has 1,600 branches. So he's like, he has access to all this stuff. And thus, he also knows how to steal money and hide his tracks, you know? And this is like
the breadth of that 1,600 banks. Like you have like that's 1,600 that the shell could have 1,600 shells that could have a marble under it. You know,
there's
a lot of stuff to move around.
Yeah. And he like had access to basically everything. So he could like write and grant and deny and approve loans. So he, you know, this is like giving a pyromaniac a can of gasoline. Like this guy is of course going to start using this access to this money to gamble on it because I'll make it back and then I'll put it back because that's what you think when you're a gambler.
I'll totally make it back.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I? What else could happen?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he did the thing that like everybody in this position that we've talked about has done. We just talked about someone who basically did this with military money. He would extend bank loans to like fake companies and then approve them and then move the funds around and then just withdraw them himself, you know? So he also would skim, just straight up skim money from people with a lot of it who he knew they wouldn't notice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Where it's like, this will get replaced with interest in a couple months. Like they're not gonna, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's man. That's so, to have that level of like just access to free money, you know, even without a gambling problem, that's tempting. You gotta have, yeah, that's very tempting. And to know the system inside and out like that, like you said, I never thought about that. Oh, the interest will make it back. And unless they're going back and seeing that, you know, that's like some complex math to be like, well, hold on, I had this much in here, interest was this, I should have this.
Right.
That's, most people just see, hey, I should have this much and there's less. But when you have that factor in the amount of money is so large that the interest is covering up the tracks, that's
right.
Yeah, you gotta really be fine tooth combing your accounts.
Yeah, and like if you have a big account, there's probably tons and tons of transactions happening all the time. So like you wouldn't necessarily miss certain things, you know, if it's like a business or something. But I mean, I think also the thing that keeps people from doing this, it's not just temptation. It's also that like you do have to be pretty smart to figure out how to do it. Like,
yeah,
not everybody. I mean, you know, like I guess if I thought about it, I could figure out how to steal money from my job. But like,
yeah,
it would take thought, you know, it would take a lot of planning. And in that planning, I would go, is the amount of money I could steal from my job more or less than what I am paid at my job? Because I'm probably going to lose my job. You know.
Well, you know, if you're looking for, if you just need some time to plan, you said you're there until Sunday. You know,
that's what I'm doing up at the artist retreat. Yeah. Thinking of ways to steal tuition money from, you know, students at a college. But yeah. So this guy, he figured it out and he was doing it. Keep in mind, he is in Canada. So there is not places near him where he can legally gamble. At this time, there were no. Now Canada has some online casinos. They didn't back then. It was the 70s, I think. So he would go cross the border, go to the U.S. and play in American casinos. He would. Yeah, there's no internet then, so like that's what you'd have to do.
East Coast Canada, right? He's in Toronto.
He's in Toronto, yeah. So kind of, I wonder if Middle East, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking Mohegan Sun out in Connecticut, but I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of other options.
He would fly to Atlantic City. That's where he'd go.
Oh, yeah.
So, he liked to play. He played everything. He played poker. He played craps. He played roulette. He would bet on sports. You know, he was everything, you know, just the kids gambling. He likes gambling. So when he first started going down, he would just bring cash with him. He would just like, they say one time he flew down with $350,000 in his clothing. Like he said, they did an interview with him. He said he was so stuffed with cash, he could hardly sit down. And when he walked through airport security, his keys set off the alarm. And so he was like, you know, just like waddling over to like put his keys. And they just wave him through.
The Nathan Fielder suit.
Right. He's in the Nathan Fielder suit and it's lined with cash. And he's like freaking out that they're going to stop him. And then they just wave him on through after he gets the keys. And yeah, so like that's how he does it at first, but then like he keeps going down. First of all, he ends up spending so much money at this casino that they just start sending him a chartered plane. They're flying him.
Yeah, like,
you know,
get down here, sir.
Yeah. And he would go, after work and then go home late and then go to work the next day. So he would just fly down, fly back.
I know he's a bank president. I'm sure he's making tons of money, like legit on the books as well.
Probably.
Like a good amount of money, but. Yeah, like private planes to Atlantic City every weekend. Like that's, you know, he's not making that kind of money. Like,
totally.
Or at least, yeah, especially, like, I'm sure his peers are financially literate. I bet they're probably like, hey, that's a lot of travel.
Well,
isn't,
this is all secret. Like he,
oh yeah,
he's not telling anybody. Yep. He has a wife and his wife doesn't know. Like,
oh damn.
Which I feel like that sucks because it's like, you think he's having an affair and then you find out you're like, hundreds of thousands of dollars down the hole and he's going to jail. Like that. I don't know. I don't know what's worse.
Are you fucking your secretary? He's like, even better. I'm fucking our life up.
Right. I'm like ruining your credit. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So after he decides this cash thing is not working, I can't bring cash down. He starts depositing the proceeds from these loans that he's approving, these fraudulent loans, into the account of a company called California Clearing Corp. And what California Clearing is it's a subsidiary of a casino in Vegas called Desert Palace. And the entire point of this is so that people can give the casino money without people who don't want them to do that to know. So, like, it's super shady. Like, it should not be allowed. But it's basically like, it's sort of like when they're like, you know, if you subscribe to my OnlyFans, it won't show up as OnlyFans. It'll show up as this or whatever.
That kind of
shit.
It's like the Ashley Madison of the gambling world.
Yes.
Like, it's just have a discreet.
Like, exactly. Like, you know, if you don't want people to know you're transferring funds for gambling, use this and it just looks like a regular professional payment. So
yeah,
that's what he was doing. By the way, I wrote this a long time ago and I forgot about this. He actually didn't make a lot of money at his job. He had like a pretty modest salary. Yeah. I don't know what the deal was back then, but he made the equivalent of like $50,000 a year. So,
I guess they were like, yeah, if you just make banking a regular job, you know, like your country doesn't drive towards a financial cliff every 5 to 6 years.
Right. They're not doing, you know, CDOs and shit and like tanking the housing market. It's just a normal job.
I've heard bankers talk about people who are in the industry for a long time, because they were like, that's what banking used to be, or especially stockbrokers. Stockbroker was a boring job. It was like, they said you could even go back and find like pop culture references where it's used as an example as a boring guy, like stockbroker, glasses, nerdy dude, you know, stain on his tie. And they say the turning point was fucking Wall Street with Gordon Gekko on Wall Street. They were like that was a completely fictionalized idea of what a stockbroker would be, and there really wasn't a real life analog until after the movie came out.
So that movie is why the housing market tanked. It's because of that movie.
Yeah, pretty much, because greed is actually good,
apparently. Exactly.
I didn't know that.
But yeah, so this guy wasn't in that sector. He was just a regular bank boy making regular money. He,
hey, bank boy, leave me alone. He's just walking.
That was actually one thing. That is in the movie too. He wore like bad suits. Like his suits didn't fit.
Yeah.
He did not. He was not a flashy dresser. He didn't have a flashy car. He lived in a one bedroom apartment. I guess he had a girlfriend at this time, not a wife. He lived in a one bedroom apartment with his girlfriend. Just like normal dude.
It's like, yeah, he led a very non-extravagant lifestyle. It's like, yeah, because he was losing his ass in Atlantic City.
Yeah, man. We're going to talk about how much money he lost. It's crazy. He was very unlucky. I mean, I guess, like, also, if you're gambling that much, you're going to lose that much because the odds are tilted slightly in the house's favor. So, like, of course, you're going to, over a long enough period of time, you're going to lose. So
should have just played CeeLo.
Yeah.
You got the bank in CeeLo, man. You can last all night, dude. He could have really made some action.
So he, over 15 months in the early 1980s, Maloney made 37 Over 15 months in the early 1980s, Maloney made 37 visits to his preferred venue, which was the Caesars in Atlantic City. They, as I said, they sent him private jets. They hooked him up with hotel rooms. You know, they rolled out the red carpet for this guy. They called him Mr. M. That was his like alias, you know?
I bet they do that because they're like, if we've noticed if we give them an alias, they spend more money.
Yeah.
They think they're cool. They're like, ooh, I'm Mr. M. Yeah. M stands for millions. You know?
So, this is also kind of cute. So, He says that they would offer to hook him up with prostitutes, and that was, he always would say no. And he said when they interviewed him, he said, the only lady I was interested in is luck. Which is like, man, that is an unrequited interest. Yeah. She wants nothing to do with you, man.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, he would fly down after work, gamble all night, go home, take a shower, and go back to the office. Girlfriend didn't know. Nobody knew what was going on. I think he was embarrassed, like a lot of addicts are. And I also think he knew if people knew, they'd be like, well, where, with what money are you going down there with a private jet, you know?
Yeah, when you, a guy tells you he lost 300 grand in a weekend, and like immediately you're going to be like, hey, doesn't that guy work at a bank? Like your brain's going to start making connections. That's
right,
a dead giveaway, yeah.
Yeah. So, he just would go down like all the time.
So at this point, is he on like a ticking clock? Because now these loans are going to start coming due, I would imagine.
I think because like he's in charge of everything, he can just move money around and they don't.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to pay things back. I mean.
Yeah. I guess he has. He said he had 1,600 locations.
Yeah.
Also, 1,600 locations. Give that guy more than 50K a year.
I don't even like bankers. He has a lot of responsibilities.
Yeah, that guy. That's a lot of responsibility. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, maybe if you paid, I mean, it won't help with a compulsive gambler, but like it probably would help with other people. If you paid them more, maybe they wouldn't steal. Like,
Yeah.
A gambler is going to steal, but like regular people, not necessarily, you know?
Man, that's like, again, you know, never one to rush to the defense of the police force, but New Orleans is historically, and probably, I imagine so, one of the most corrupt police stations in America. And I remember at the time, at or around the time of Katrina, they said there was cops, like new cops were making like $12 an hour.
Jesus.
I was like, yeah, dog, I would be.
I'd also be corrupt. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd also be corrupt. Yeah, like, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I was just reading about like the protection rackets and like police corruption problems with the cartels in Mexico, and it's like, yeah, because the cartels have more money than the government, so like
yeah.
They're easy to buy, like the police don't get paid enough, and they also like are always asking for more sort of like infrastructure and equipment and things like that, and they don't get it, and it's like, well, the cartels will do it. And then they'll just be like, just arrest the other guys. Like, we're giving you all the stuff and you're still making arrests. You're just arresting one specific group of people, you know? So.
But I'll hit the gun. I'm like, hey, we were wondering if they had room in the budget to get a second walkie-talkie, because we got one. And we're just
feeling
that.
Kind of useless without the other one.
Yeah. It's a little counterintuitive, you know?
So, yeah. He, like, you know, like everybody who gets in this situation, he thought he could win it back before anybody was the wiser. He was like, I'll put it back. I'll be, you know, high rolling. I don't know. I mean, obviously, this defies logic. This is like a compulsive. There's neurological stuff going on that makes people do this. But I'm like, how far ahead are you thinking when you're in this zone? Like, what do you think will happen? Do you really think that if you get up, you're going to stop? You really think you're going to stop?
Yeah.
Like, you're just going to pull out this money when you have enough to pay it back? Like, has that ever happened, ever?
Yeah, you've never done that. You haven't done it yet, you know? Yeah.
Right.
Also, like,
I have to imagine he's been up before.
I know luck plays a huge part, but I wonder if he's, like, actually, like, bad at certain games. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, is this guy, like, hitting on 17? Or, like, what's
So, yeah, I think he is bad at gambling, from what I can tell, because there is. So there's a story.
I bet on the sickly horse. I thought he wanted it more.
I like to spear it.
Yeah.
So there's a story about him, actually. So there was one night he put $5,000 each on 40 football matches, and he lost every single bet. He had 50% odds. He lost every bet.
Dude, it's like, stop.
Worse than
gambling.
Random.
Like, Dude, it's like the guy in A Bronx Tale who's just like bad luck, like Tony Mush. Everything he touches turns to mush. And like fucking Chaz Palminteri shooting dice, and his luck starts running out, so he makes Mush stand in the bathroom. He's like, get out of here, Mush. Like,
this is like, to me, you do this, you bet $5,000 each on 40 football matches, you short your own bets. You're like, I'll take the odds that I'll lose all of these bets. And yeah, then, yeah. Then you win big, you know?
Yeah. And then now I owe myself $34 million. And so, ipso facto, I'm in the black, baby.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. This is my betting strategy when I sign up for my sports betting website and get all the free money, because it's free money. So I bet against myself constantly, because that's how you turn it into real money. It's great. It's so much fun. So he loses every single bet. So that one night he lost $200,000. So, thumbs down.
God damn, dude. And again, that's 4 years of his salary.
Yeah. Yep.
That's insane, man. Yeah, that's like 19 years of my salary.
It's right, exactly. That's like all the money I make in the world. I get it. It's a problem. But like, you're not watching 40 football games. Why can't you just bet on one football game? Like, why? Right?
Yeah.
Is it more exciting to have 40 different bets? Yeah. I don't get it.
I don't know a lot about sports gambling, but like, I would feel that is bad to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that shows like a guy where like, you don't know how to do this. You know, like
you don't know anything about the teams. You don't know.
Bet on every single thing happening. How would you even think? At some point, if you're going through 40 fucking matches, every one of those is not an educated guess. Totally. You're not like, well, you know, Barry's hand is hurt, blah, 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 blah. No, you're just picking shit at that point. Like, and that's a lot of money to be all willy-nilly with, sir.
Yeah, a lot of someone else's money. Yeah. So his last gambling session before they caught him, he lost $1 million at craps. So, yeah.
Oh,
he's not good.
Oh, God damn it. You guys saw the viewers that watched the craps game that we had in here, me and Zach. Mm-hmm. I edited that, and I was looking at parts where, like, it was just $80 each. So it was $160 total was, like, the what was on the table. Mm-hmm. And there was, like, you can see in my face, I was like, shit. Like, I was stressing out. And that's a million at craps. Jesus Christ.
Yep. Again, when this is happening, he is 27 years old. He's 27.
Oh,
with this
yeah.
much money. This all happened within a couple years.
Yeah, yeah, that is. Also, when was the Philip Seymour Hoffman movie out? Because has he ever looked 27?
Yeah, he's never ever looked 27. But I think this guy was kind of a Philip Seymour Hoffman type. I think he was like a little schlubby, you know, kind of a square
young Roger Ebert type.
That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was his last game. So what happens to him is he is coming back from Atlantic City and he's being driven home from the airport in a limo, of course.
Guy's like, it was the last fucking time this is happening.
I mean, it's not a bad consolation prize for giving the casino $1 million.
Yeah,
so.
I'd be drinking all the little airport bottles of booze in the back. I'd just be like, you can't stop me, man.
Yeah, this is it. So they pull over his limo and apparently...
doing the out the sunroof thing, but he's sad.
<It's just>
like...
Yep.
His 1,000-yard stare, wind in his hair.
So the cops had apparently been on to him for quite a while because of the wiretaps. I think they caught one of his bookies and they like unearthed this Canadian like bookmaking ring, because obviously he was doing gambling outside of these casinos too.
Yeah.
And they got his, you know, I'm sure his code or whatever was coming up constantly in these bookies records.
Yeah,
so they start tailing this guy. And they find out what's going on, and so they arrest him. He embezzled and lost. He lost every penny that he embezzled. $10 million. At the time, $10 million, now worth $26 million Canadian today.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Probably even now, because this is from 2017. So that's probably like $80 million today because of inflation.
Yeah.
So
whenever I think of Canadian money thing, I always think of how many hardcover books they can buy.
Yeah. the one thing that's listed in both prices for some reason. The one product. Yeah.
Damn, that's
it's
insane.
A lot of hardcover books.
Yeah.
So yeah, he lost all that money. He didn't have a cent to pay it back when they caught him. This sort of reminds me of the ATM scam thing we did too, because the bank didn't know. The bank had no idea. The cops had to tip off the bank that this was happening. and then they had to do their own investigation because they were like, we're pretty sure this guy is stealing this money. Like, there's no other source, and he works at a bank. So, like, hey, heads up. So, yeah, they didn't know anything about it. They went through their accounts and stuff. They realized what was going on. So he gets charged with all the things that you get charged with, all the wire fraud and all of that stuff. He goes to jail. He pleads guilty. He goes to jail for 6 years. But this is the thing that sort of made me particularly interested in this story, because I just thought this was a pretty wild thing that happened. So the bank ends up suing the casino because they're like, you should have known that this was criminally obtained money. You should, with the sending it to a clearinghouse, like all of that stuff, they were like, it was like irresponsible of you to let this guy gamble, which is like kind of funny because it's like, it's kind of irresponsible to let most people who gamble.
I'm just seeing like, just the casino head of an Atlantic City casino, just full tracksuit, dark sunglasses, and he's just like, I refute all these claims.
Right. You know, like, pleading the fifth, left and right.
Yeah. I'm pleading the fifth.
So, they sue the Caesars in Atlantic City because they were like, you should have at least done like a background check. Like, you should have, with this amount of money, you should have validated his income. You should have asked for tax returns, you know, like you should have done your due diligence. And so the bank sort of implied that they either knew it was stolen or that they should have known. And they reached a settlement at the end. They did come to an agreement. So apparently just at Caesars, Maloney lost $4,732,000 just at that one casino.
Shit, man.
And that was like,
Okay. That's all like that's free money. You know what I'm saying? Like, for them. And like I'm not saying they have any obligation or whatever, you know, to give another country their money back. But like at the same time, it's like if somebody just came in and put $4 million on the table and was like, you guys can hold on to that. You know what I'm saying? Like that's you did nothing for that.
Come up off
some of that, you know?
So that's what the bank was trying to recover. That's what they said in their damages. The terms of the settlement were private, but the thing that was interesting to me is part of the agreement, Caesars had to close for a day. That was part of the... this guy gambled so much that they shut down the casino for a day. Like, in his honor, basically.
Yeah, right. I just have a moment of silence for this guy.
Yeah.
Oh, what a Canadian reprimand.
Yeah.
You got to give us something. And also, you got a promise. No casino for a day.
You know? Yeah. So...
we got to the maple syrup handshake to make it official. There you go. We're bonded by syrup now.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. they have to sit down to a nice pancake breakfast together and talk about this settlement.
Yeah, and if we don't like how you deal with this, we're not inviting you to next week's. So you won't be able to come back for 2 weeks to the pancake breakfast.
So the day they did November 30th, which was the Sunday after Thanksgiving, which I imagine is probably a big gambling day. Football and all that, Black Friday, etc. So November 30th, they shut down for the day. Apparently, the casino stood to lose between $700,000 and $800,000 by being closed for the day. That's how much they make a day. which is crazy because it's like, well, this one guy paid your bills for weeks and months, you know? Yeah. So Brian Maloney, as I said, he went to jail for 6 years. He got out early because probably a lot of people who go to prison for financial crimes, he was just a dude with a problem. He was not like a He's not like a violent criminal or whatever. And it's Canadian jail, so it's probably pretty chill. So
Yeah. One day he was like, hey, can I get out of here? And they were like, Yeah, go ahead and take off.
I guess he can.
Did he parlay this into anything like post career? Was he just like it was like some History Channel thing where he's like, hi, I'm Mahoney and I'm the dumbest fucking guy in Canada.
So when he got out, he started like giving talks about gambling addiction. So he, according to all parties, he did beat it. He just like he I'm sure he got some counseling in prison because again it's Canadian prison, so they probably like
try
to rehabilitate you know. So he like he according to him conquered it. He said about his gambling addiction, it's insidious, destructive, and exhilarating. Win or lose, it matters not. It's just action. So he received, as I said, he received treatment. So I'm sorry, I actually misspoke. He was sentenced to 6 years. He only served two. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So he got out really quickly.
Did a deuce back on the streets, baby.
Yeah. 24 months. Not bad, you know?
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. So that's like a mobile contract.
So yeah, like he ended up, this is crazy to me. So he got married later. He went into the financial services business. So like people gave him a job with money again, which is kind of wild. Used it all his own name, didn't change his name, was just, I guess he's just like very sincerely contrite and people trusted him.
Yeah, he's like, well, I can tell you, I'm not doing that again.
So, damn, that's the last little bit that I want to say here is just to put a sort of underline that point. So there's a book called Stung by Gary Stephen Ross that the movie Owning Mahoney is based on. And the guy who wrote it says, I would have no hesitation trusting Maloney with my life savings. So, like, he totally believes that this guy is reformed and just had a crazy time for a couple years. So, yeah, that's Brian Mahoney Maloney. That's the story.
I'm going to say not worth it. Like, you know what I'm saying? It feels like there was not a there was never a good moment. It felt like it was all one big Henry Hill moment. Like he's like, shit, I got to solve this. And it doesn't seem like he did anything to really enjoy the money. 2 years of Canadian prison. Yeah, I'm going to say not worth it. I mean, he got to fly in a private jet. I guess that's pretty fun. I guess you're just talking about for 2 years. I'm sure you'd have to pay any of it back because
he didn't have any of it.
Anyone could
pay
that
back. He already
gave
it to the casino. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They paid some money and then they had to shut down for a day. So maybe like I don't want to say worth it, but maybe moot. Do we have a third option? Can we say moot?
The sentence is like, it's if you're just thinking about the jail time, if you're like, is this, I get to steal shit and only do 2 years, it's worth it in that sense. But I agree with you that like, I can't imagine this was fun for him. I don't think this was a fun time. I don't think he looks back on this time in his life fondly. So like in that sense, it is not worth it.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. Well, shit. Kat, thank you so much for telling us that story. I might just wake up one of these days and go on another Philip Seymour Hoffman bender and watch that.
I will say I didn't love the movie.
Okay.
But it's Philip Seymour Hoffman. Like, it's good. It's not bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll check that out. Kat, thank you so much for telling us that. This is going to be out in May.
April 4th.
Was that?
April 4th.
April 4th.
Yeah, we're pretty far from May.
I got nothing. I don't have anything coming up. I don't know if I have any shows or anything. I know that's too far out. You got anything to plug?
If you're listening to this the day it comes out, come to PID protest tomorrow, April 5th at 7:30 at Silo. It's going to be fun. That's all.
You got to promise.
Yeah. Okay?
You guys got to promise you're going to go to that. well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Like I said, you can find us on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at Lie, Cheat, Steal Podcast. And also, we are on patreon.com/liecheatandsteal for 2 more episodes a month, ad-free episodes of our regular feed. And you can also join our Discord server. Fun place to be. That being said, guys, make sure you leave us a 5-star rating, leave a review. That helps get the word out. But we had fun talking to you today. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thanks for tuning in. Be safe, be smart, but above all, don't get caught.
See you next time.